broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
I didn't really do anything to deserve this. I said, like, I'm like a slut.
It's hour three right now, just trying to get Grammy home from the airport.
Today, the rest of my
life. This was becoming a bullying thing, that should have come boom.
Do you ever smoke, Wolf?
No, not really.
Good adjustments.
World famous Phil Hendry Show every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast. World famous Phil Hendry Show, a news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And truth is our bitch on this show, man. And it's a bitch, too, you know.
Yeah, relax, man.
Don't tell me to relax, man. You know what? This, you know, in life, whatever it is you're supposed to do, it's either worth doing right or it ain't worth doing at all. You know, either you're going to do it to the very best ability. What do you mean relax?
I'm yelling and screaming, man, off the air. Like, you're going to get a heart attack, man, when it happened to you, man. You almost died last year.
Yeah, you got to tell people about dying.
I didn't almost die.
Yeah, but you were talking about you weren't sure.
I had pneumonia, man. I had, you know, I mean, and as a matter of fact, it's in another month. What's the date today? What's the date, bud?
The 22/4/24.
Yay, wow.
What?
Well, I got to do, man, say the 24th.
Yeah, that's what I said.
2/4. It's the 24th, right? So that means in a month and 2 days, I will have been off of cigarettes for a full year. And, thank you very much. And I gave up cigarettes 2 days, the day after Christmas, because I'll never forget what happened last year. Last year, we had finished doing Phil Hendry's Christmas Carol. We did it the night before Christmas Eve. We took Christmas Eve off, and we took off, we were supposed to take off the week between Christmas and New Year's, and we were going to come back after New Year's. I don't know when it was, but we did our night before Christmas Eve show. We took off Christmas Eve. Christmas Day, I was fine. I seem to remember returning messages, people wishing me happy, Merry Christmas. I was doing the same thing. But I think sometime around Christmas Day, I felt the cough coming on. And that was Friday. And then on Saturday, it was a bad cough. I think that was the 26th. Am I right or wrong? I forget. But in any event, that's when I didn't have a cigarette that day because I just felt my lungs were lousy. Now, that night and the following night, I was in bad shape. Every time I coughed, every single solitary part of my body hurt. There wasn't a square inch of me that didn't hurt. I'd never felt anything like that before in my life. I mean, so that when I coughed, I had to prepare myself for just a shower of pain from the top of my head all the way to the bottom of my feet. And so I began the normal procedure that we all begin. I started taking hot baths. I started treating myself with steam. You know, I tried to fast it out of me. I started to, I don't know what I was doing. And it wasn't getting better.
You should have gone to a doctor on that day.
You're right. I should have, man. I did. I don't know. So now Monday came, and I was a sick animal. I couldn't walk without my vision was blurred, and it didn't occur to me that I had anything worse than a really, really bad flu. I didn't even think that I had swine flu. It never dawned on me. Finally, I don't know how I made it to Thursday. I think that what happened was during the day I'd feel a little bit better when I took a bath or when I was taking vitamins and stuff. I couldn't do it anymore, so I had to go to the doctor on Thursday. That was New Year's Eve. That's why I held out till. And I went over to my doctor, Dr. Alt, who is fantastic. He's one of the greatest, man. Here in Ventura County, Dr. Alt is this old guy. He's a little guy, and he's like no bullcrap, man. This dude just, you know. He said to me, he said, I've seen 24 people today. You're the sickest guy I've seen. I said, you mean my material on the air? Well, that just sucks. No, he said.
Did he really?
No, he didn't. He said, you're the sickest guy that I've seen. So I said, Doc, I'm in bad. He says, I know you are. So that's when he began. He took my temperature. I had 103-degree temperature. I had no idea. I didn't. It's been so long since I was really sick. You know, the last time I was really, really, really sick, I got to tell you, it was probably when I was a kid when I had the measles or something. I have been a very fortunate guy, and I've never been in a hospital, at least up until last year. So he said, you got 103-degree temperature. So he began shooting me with antibiotics. I mean, I had a needle stuck in my rear end. I had it on the other side of my rear end. I had it in my arms. He's taking my blood. He's this. He's that. And I'm laying there, and I am sick. I was there for 4 hours in his office as he was he put that nebulizer, that mask.
Yeah, it looks like steam or something.
Right. He had that on me. He was checking the oxygen content of my blood, you know, and he said to me, all right, Phil, I'm going to send you home. And the next day was New Year's Day. He said, I'm going to call you tomorrow. And he did. He called me every 2 hours because he was really worried. He said, how you doing? I said, maybe, you know, I don't know. I don't know. He gave me a bunch of antibiotics. He gave me Tamiflu up the rear, which, by the way, I got to send some to Jace. He gave me Tamiflu coming out of my ears, man. But it was too late. It was too late. The Tamiflu was way too late. He said, and I want to see you on Saturday. That was January the 2nd. This is last year. And by the time I got over to his office on January, I should have had somebody drive me. I had Alex drive me to the doctor on Thursday. I don't know how I made it to the doctor's on Saturday because I almost fainted when I got out of the car. And they told me to come in the back entrance of the office, so I stood there like an idiot. And then they said, why didn't you come in the front door? It's because it says go in the back door, man. And the idea of going around to the front door was, so I stood there waiting for them to open this door, and in the meantime, almost fainting.
What do you mean you almost fainted?
I mean, I began to black out. And it had to have been the fact that there was no oxygen getting into my blood by this point, right? So anyway, Susie, who's a friend of mine, Dr. Alt called Susie, and she comes over. He says he's got to go to the hospital. And by this point, I'm like, fine, great. I feel so bad, man. I'll do anything to feel better. So that's what happened. And she drove me over there to St. John's Medical Center at Ventura County. The best. Just the best. And I'm the grumpiest, most cranky patient in the world. And I don't know how they put up with me because I was just all, you know, what are you guys waking me up for? I was probably the biggest pain in the ass, but what a great hospital. Anyway, she's like, I had never checked myself into a hospital before. So Susie's there. Like, almost like I'm on a leash. She goes, all right, come over here. And all I'm doing is standing like a big dumbass with my insurance cards. And these guys checked me into a room that night, man. And it was the weirdest experience because I'm down there in the emergency, area where they're, you know, letting people in. And there's drug addicts down there and they're walking around and I'm laughing my ass off at them. And that's how sick I was. And they finally got me up into a room and then they moved me down to the... I don't know where the hell the lung room, you know, the lung ward, you know.
Where they treat people with a lung with lung.
Yeah, where they treat people with lung.
What do you mean lung, man? Like lung problem.
Right. And that's where I was, and that's where I stayed. And now it was a very interesting thing because I didn't know really when I'd get out of there. And every time I asked the doctor, I said, well, what is wrong? He says, you have pneumonia. You got double pneumonia, Phil. And it's a tsunami, he said to me. He says, it's a tsunami. It will wash over you, but we don't know how big it is and when it will end. But it's an event. And I said, okay. But I'll tell you something, man. They had me on extra oxygen. They had me getting a blood test it seemed like every 4 hours. They had me x-rayed, my lungs x-rayed every day, it seemed like. In fact, one night, I'll never forget it, these two blonde angels, I must have had a bad fever. I couldn't have had a fever by then. I think I was okay. But these two blondes walk into my room, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. And they're all dressed in their green x-ray gear. And it's just these two blonde chicks moving me around and propping me up and x-raying me. And then, then they vanished. And I never did get their names or, you know.
Maybe he was hallucinating that part. It's possible.
No, this is real. These are real people.
Nah, you could be right, man.
They're real people. I wasn't hallucinating. The bad fever I had like days before, I was fine. It was just weird. And I told you, I met people in this hospital this week. There were guys, the doctors are coming in. This guy says to me, Phil, I listened to your show when I was taking my medical exam. Phil, I listened to your show when I was studying for my doctorate. Phil, I listened to your show when I was getting my physical therapy. I had three or four people coming in, and a couple of them people that were treating me, which was a trip. This guy, he's a cardiologist. He says, I listened to you while I was in medical school. And I said to him, that doesn't make me feel good because that means you were concentrating on, like, you know,
Bobby Dooley or something.
Yeah, Bobby Dooley, and you don't know what you're doing. And he's like, ha, 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 ha. So that was that. And all these days go by. We can't tell you when you're leaving. We can't tell you when. And then finally comes this doctor, Dr. Edwards. He comes in. He's wearing the mask. He's got on this long gown. He has the rubber gloves on. And you know how doctors hold their hands when they have their gloves on? It's like they crook one hand and they fit the other hand into it, like one hand under and one hand on top. And he says, I'm Dr. Edwards. And he was very officious. And he says, and let me just tell you, you know. And he says, we believe that you have swine 1N1, which morphed into pneumonia, which, and we also think you have valley fever. And he just laid all of the stuff. I went, God, man, all that, huh? And it was finally Saturday. And he said to me, and I think you can be, we can check you out today at 2 o'clock. I'm like, oh, thank God. Because I didn't, as good as those people were, I had to get out of there. I had to get out of there.
Yeah, I know. You had to get better food, right?
Well, look, hospital food is hospital food. Everybody complains about it. But around midweek, I called Alex. I said, man, you got to get me some Pollo Loco.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I said, you got to go get me some, man. Well, I don't know. Please, man, you got to get me Pollo Loco. I don't care what you got to do. I don't care who you got to kill. Well, okay. He came over with a bucket of that.
Man, you should have called me. I'll bring a Pollo Loco.
Oh, no. I'm going to bother you, man. So anyway, make a long story short, I got out of there and came home. And that was a week after I was supposed to be back on the air. And I was still a mess. And it took me another week of being back, of just laying around the house until I was able to get back on the air. And when I finally got back on the air, I'll never forget my first night back, it was a great show. And I don't know how it was a great show because I was still on oxygen. And I had to take oxygen and the tube, because I didn't have a long, didn't have the strength to carry the oxygen tank into the studio with me. I dropped the tube down the stairs and dragged the tube all the way into the studio so that during a break, I'd sit there sucking on oxygen.
Yeah, but were you still sick?
I must have been. That first night back on the air, I was sweating like a pig. I had a big beach towel with me wiping the sweat off of me. And for the whole week, I sweat like an animal. But it was a great week of shows, and I gradually started feeling better. I'd say, like, the end of that week, I was feeling good. I mean, I don't even think, I'm going to be honest with you, it took me months, man, to get back up to 100%. You ever get pneumonia, you will not get over it for months. Months! I couldn't breathe. I couldn't walk. I'm telling you, you think that it's pneumonia is just a bad cold. It's something more, man. It's a whole assault on everything that you are or ever will be. Whatever you think you are physically, pneumonia will beat the crap out of that, man, and tell you, guess what? You're starting all over again.
The first guest you had on when you come back, I got it right here, with Doug Danger, David Hall, and Emery Clayton.
Yeah.
Those are the first ones back?
Yeah. We have that as a best of one time.
Probably. That was back on, what was the date, man? That must have been like January 16th, something like that. All right, so that's that story. Coming back, Twitter tirades test the limits of freedom of speech. That's a kind of an opinion piece, but an interesting thing there. TSA, some government officials to skip airport security. How dare they? And, oh, TSA workers face a tough job. Headbutted, punched, kicked, and shoved. It's an interesting story considering that we had on last night Art Griego saying the same thing. It's another life-imitating Phil segment on the world-famous Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show. You're listening to the world-famous Phil Henry Show.
Coming up, a story about this guy, Michael Brea. Perhaps we should do the story now. I think we ought to do the story now.
You're going to talk about a Twitter tirade and everything.
I'll talk about Twitter tirades later. This story is, it's screaming to be told, and that's what he was doing, screaming Bible passages. Michael Brea, Michael L. Brea, a Haitian-born actor, before he killed his mother with a samurai sword.
Oh, man.
It was in Brooklyn, New York. Police say the Ugly Betty actor held his mother hostage and then decapitated her with a samurai sword while screaming Bible passages. Let's see. The other news of this story, neighbors identified the suspect as Haitian-born Michael Bray. He's also had roles in the movie Set Up 3D. He was also the face of a campaign for the energy drink Coca-Cola Full Throttle. Neighbors say, yeah, I'll bet. And I shouldn't.
You should make no joke about it.
Oh, let me write that down, though.
Yeah, huh? Anyway, neighbors on the first and third floors of the 501 Park Place in Prospect Heights heard screams coming from the apartment on the second floor at about 1:30 a.m. on Tuesday. I hear the brother chasing his mother through the house, and he's just saying a bunch of Bible passages like repent, 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 said neighbor George Clare.
What do you mean my brother?
That's what he's calling him. He's black.
He's a black guy.
Oh.
Anyway, when responding officers arrived, they encountered the mentally disturbed 31-year-old Brea. He was very combative toward the first responders, who had to taser the man in order to subdue him. Ugly Betty actor Michael Brea killing his mother. Here is Gregory Clare and Bernard Brent live in the building that Michael Brea lives in. They speak to WPIX-TV about what they heard.
I hear the brother chasing it through the house, and he's just saying a bunch of like passages, like he's like, repent, 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 chasing it through the house, you know. And I hear a loud scream, like we hear the scream. So I have my father call the cops or whatever, call 911.
I had just dozed off to go to sleep, and then I woke up to somebody screaming, and it sounded like a lady voice, and then after a while, I just didn't hear the woman's voice again.
Officers described this crime scene as extremely bloody, where the victim was discovered and immediately pronounced dead.
Well, do you think, ma'am?
I know, but they have to do it technically.
You gotta pronounce him dead. What's so big about that?
She ain't got no head. You know.
Yeah, so you go over and say, okay, she's dead. And then you sign it and everything.
Well, I don't know if they did that either, bud, but you're right. The medical examiner and the people, the coroner, and they have to make it official, you know. You know that New York, and this is a little bit off point, New York is the city that gave us the office of the medical examiner. Before New York, they had coroners, but they didn't have medical examiners, and I'm saying they, I mean the cities of America. Before the city of New York had a health department and a medical examiner and a professional coroner, we had clowns that were running medical departments for cities around this country that used to be barbers, they used to be shoeshine guys, they didn't know their ass from a hole in the ground.
About how to pronounce people dead?
Well, you do need that. You have to make a record. Why did this person die? And they had, in New York City, they had, like, might have fallen off of a horse or was run over by a, you know, they didn't have any real. And so New York City, at the turn of the century, decided we can't keep doing this. We got to, you know, so they got a medical examiner, a professional, a doctor, and a coroner. And every single solitary death certificate from that point forward was very professionally done. What was the cause of death? Well, it was thus and so. And American cities began to follow suit. Because before that, we had no real quality record keeping. We'd say, literally, if you looked at a death certificate in New York City just before they did this, it would say it could be cirrhosis of the liver or maybe he fell out of a tree. Honest, I swear to God.
Well, what kind of jackball going to do that?
That's how they obviously didn't take it very seriously. It didn't matter. And it was also an office that was politically abused. You know, oh, I'm the medical examiner. I can do, I don't know what the hell they could get being the medical examiner, but that's what happened. So they have to do it right, bud, you know. And
No, Robert's the guy.
Or I mean, Robert, they got to do it right.
Yeah, but if you walk over to say, I'm going to pronounce her dead now. Oh, okay. She don't have no head.
Well, don't keep saying that, man. They have to do it right. Anyway, several sources closest to the investigation told Channel 11 that Brea used a samurai sword. Oh, God. The Phil Henry Show will be right back with that Twitter tirade and free speech and all that here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. PhilHenryShow.com, by the way, is our website. Visit us. Watch the video.
Phil Henry. Broadcasting from the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Henry.
Right here.
I know, bud. Welcome back here, the world-famous Phil Henry. You're saying what I said, right?
Yeah, you're right about it.
What I said was Dancing with the Stars you know, I don't know that this happened, but Dancing with the Stars, it's too simple to say that, you know, ABC is somehow influenced by the Palin family, and that's why they're keeping Bristol Palin. I mean, what influences ABC and what influences all of these networks is viewership, and that means advertising, and that means money. That's what influences them, not Sarah Palin. And obviously they had a really, really big number for this Bristol Palin Dancing with the Stars competition, so that they ensured that she is on the show through the finale of tonight, which is now last night. And therefore, it doesn't matter who wins, as long as the viewers are there. And sure enough, tonight, the winner was Jennifer Grey, right? From, what the hell was the movie that she was in, man? Jennifer Grey was in Dirty Dancing. She was the winner. Bristol Palin didn't win, but who cares? Because ABC won the night. They had 23.3 million viewers. So, the viewership is guaranteed.
I'll say that again.
I ain't going to go through it again, man.
Well, what do you mean? Why weren't they influenced by what was the lady?
Sarah Palin. Look, man, they care about one thing, money. Sarah Palin has got no amount of power that's going to make ABC do anything that they don't want to do. Now, what they wanted to do is they wanted to have viewers. They got it. Bristol Palin was a home run. Doesn't matter who wins. You know?
Do you think that they made her lose?
I don't know. I honestly don't. But I can tell you this. It didn't matter tonight because the viewers were locked in. There they were. And they were going to hang around until the end. So let me just get to this. All right, man. If you don't understand, Robert, I'll explain it to you after the show. How about that? Oh, what's this?
This is what happened on the night you come back.
Well, here it is. Phil's pneumonia. I came back in the first hour. I told the story. Then David Hall... David Hall came on and said that I should lie and talk about death rumors. Then the Golden Globes, the 2009, and Avatar-induced depression. Then in hour two, Margaret Gray said that we should all donate at least $500 to Haiti or we're racists. And then finally, in the last hour, Bob Green stole Haitian relief funds because customers just want to feel good and it doesn't matter what happens to the money. That was the night we came back.
Yeah, Bob Green was pretty funny.
It was great. All right. 8 o'clock, ABC. What is this, Jason? This is Monday night. This Monday night?
It was last night.
Tuesday night. Then that would be Monday. That's what I was said. Wasn't Dancing with the Stars on Tuesday night? Okay. All right. So Monday night, they won the night with 23 million. Fox second with 9 million. Look at how it kicked Fox's ass. CBS was third with How I Met Your Mother, 9 million. NBC's Chuck, 4.5 million. The CW, 90210 rerun, 885,000. In the 9 o'clock hour, Dancing with the Stars killed. And then they had a Skating with the Stars premiere, 15.2 million. I think that's very weird that they throw that number in there, so it doesn't mean anything. And I'm sorry that I actually read that to you, because I can't decipher what that's supposed to mean. 2.5 Men in 9 o'clock hour, Mike and Molly. Get this crap out of here. If I can't we're going to have to figure a way, man, to put these ratings together so human beings understand them. Otherwise, I'm going to stop reading them. There's no point, man.
Well, I try to do it the right way.
What does it mean, man, when Dancing with the Stars and Skating with the Stars and they both have 11 million and, you know, who's getting what? God. Twitter tirades test limits of freedom of speech. What's a tweet between friends? Well, the law says sometimes it's a threat. One man thought he was just bantering with his pals when he joked about blowing an airport sky high. Another was reacting to a radio phone-in when he mused about stoning a journalist to death. Because they made their throwaway comments on Twitter, both are in legal trouble. Their cases have outraged civil libertarians and inflamed the debate about the limits of free speech in a web world. The internet increasingly makes private jokes, tastes, and opinions available for public consumption, blurring the line between public and private in a way that has left the law struggling to keep up. This is the worst written story among the thousands that we use on this show. This is the worst written thing I've ever seen. According to Gregory Pryor, some dumbass who works for Reed Smith in London, well, that's applicable. I think people don't have any idea of the potential legal ramifications of things they post on the internet. Oh, so you mean there are legal ramifications? I thought you said that the line was blurred. Anything you post on Twitter can come back and haunt you. Really? So then it isn't blurred. Paul Chambers found out with a vengeance. The 27-year-old trainee accountant was convicted and fined about tweeting in January that he'd blow up Robin Hood Airport in northern England if his flight was delayed. Chambers, who lost his job and faces several thousand pounds in legal costs, said Monday that he's instructed his lawyers to take his case to the high court, setting the stage for a major test of free speech online. Probably to the detriment of my mental well-being, I'm appealing the decision as best I can, Chambers tweeted on Monday. Well, brother, how about using another example of what it is that you want to do? How about you'll blow yourself up? Chambers is already an online cause celeb after he lost an appeal earlier this month. Thousands of Twitter users repeated his offending message. Robin Hood Airport is closed. You've got a week. Otherwise, I'm blowing the airport sky high. Well, then it becomes free speech because it's obviously not to be taken seriously. It's a form of sarcastic, satirical speech in support of a particular political point of view. That's not hard. They added the tag, I am Spartacus. A reference to the 1960 movie epic in which the titular hero's fellow rebels all assume his identity as a gesture of solidarity. So this goes along with what we've been talking about, that people think that the Internet is the Wild West. And as long as we have the Internet, then it's the Wild West. You can go out and do anything you want. You can say anything you want. You can steal anything you want. You can be anything you want. And it's the Internet. It's a really juvenile point of view. It's the way children think. And I'm not saying it's because there's a lot of young users. I'm thinking that there are so many people on the Internet who got this message somehow that there's no law out there. The Internet is wide open. No, it isn't. International agreements have been drawn up between nations to strengthen copyright protection, for instance. There are people who have been sentenced to prison for copyright violation. And you cannot, no matter where, slander or libel somebody. That means say thus and so that injures someone's reputation. Now, when it comes to threats, well, we live in a day and age where every nervous, hand-wringing grandmother is worried that we didn't notice the warning signs. You know, he busted into that school and shot people. What were the warning signs? And to think that he posted this on Internet and on Twitter, and we didn't say anything.
Yeah, but you can't every single thing what a guy says.
Well, all right, man, I guess we shouldn't. But if we don't, and then that guy goes and shoots somebody up, then we say, oh, look at this. The guy was giving us, that was a warning sign.
Yeah, okay. So what are you saying, man? You saying like the guy that did Columbine and were kidding?
No, I'm not saying they were kidding. Those kids that did Columbine, they were online. They were serious, dude. All right? We're not talking about kids now, though, who act out, who are childish, who are nervous, angry, scared. We're talking about adults in a world of airplanes blowing up and buildings falling down. And a guy coming on and saying, I'm going to blow the airport up. I don't know. What do you think? If you were flying out of that airport that day and that cat had just said that, what would you think?
I wouldn't care at all, man. I'd fly on an airplane and everything.
No, you wouldn't. You'd be squirting a few.
What do you mean squirting a few?
Hold on. You're serious. You'd go to the airport and you'd feel good.
I mean, I'd like them to check it out, you know.
Well, how are they going to check that out?
You could call the guy up and question him and everything.
Oh, okay. So we have law and Twitter, you know, do you think Twitter cares? So Twitter's got a security apparatus in place where if something is tagged or flagged as potentially threatening, Twitter will isolate it, call the police. Police will go and interview the guy. Is this what you're saying?
Yeah. Don't they have something like that?
I don't know what Twitter's got. I don't know how many people work for them. I don't know if they got anybody there that even gives a damn whether there's people threatening people. I don't know whether it's anything that Twitter wants to fool with. I don't know that Twitter wouldn't join this guy in his lawsuit. It's a lot easier and a lot more financially, you know, rewarding. The fewer people that you have on staff, the less of the overhead, the more money you make. I don't know how they make their money at Twitter, but...
Well, they make people pay for them trending topic and everything.
Oh, yeah. All right. So in any event, That's where that was at. To many Twitizens, the outrage is obvious. Chambers has no threat, was no threat to anyone, just a frustrated traveler blowing off steam. It's worrying, said Evan Harris, a former British lawmaker and free speech campaigner. The judgment seemed to misunderstand that something said across Twitter was not a serious threat. How do you know that, man? This is not the mode of choice for any suicidal jihadist. How do you know that? Who is speaking? Evan Harris, a former British lawmaker and free speech campaigner. Wow. I mean, that's true, but there's all kinds of people that use Twitter, you dumbass. He says it's like a chat in a pub. Well, no, it isn't, because in a pub, I can pretty much spot, anybody that looks like bin Laden.
Yeah, but you're going to be in a business suit.
There is sarcasm in the pub, he said. There is sarcasm on Twitter, which is understood by everyone on Twitter, but not by that judge, of course. Let me tell you something, Evan Harris, you dumbass. I don't know about Twitter, but I was on Facebook one night when I saw some broad on there saying she wanted to shoot Sarah Palin. Okay, that's how much she hated her, and she's some drunk broad, 3 o'clock in the morning on Facebook, right? So I went ahead and reported her to Facebook. I said, hey, she's making threats to a public official. I don't give a damn if she is kidding. I could care less. Now, what, you tell me I shouldn't take that seriously? Well, okay, I don't take it seriously. I reported her just because I didn't like her.
Well, what's that mean, man? You don't like her?
I don't like anybody talking like that. How do you feel about that, huh?
Yeah, now you're infringing on our freedom of speech. Well, she had a right to say that.
Oh, she does she? Well, I say no, she doesn't. And even if she does, I went ahead and reported her anyway because she was an ugly bitch. How about that?
Well, you ain't good looking.
I know I'm not good looking. What are you guys? What happened to you guys? So anybody can get on Facebook or Twitter and say anything. Is that it?
No.
How about if I get on there and talk about your mother? Would you like that?
Talk about my mother about what?
I don't care. You wouldn't like it. Another ill-fated tweeter has received less sympathy from Chambers. Gareth Compton, a conservative counselor in the English city of Birmingham, was arrested this month on suspicion of sending off an offensive or indecent message after tweeting an invitation for a journalist to be stoned to death, a comment he insists was a joke. The subject of his tweet, newspaper columnist Yasmin Ali Baba, whatever the hell, Brown, reported him to police. Well, wait a minute, maybe he was only kidding. He was arrested and questioned, but he has not been charged. He later released an apology for his ill-conceived attempt at humor. Sympathy for Compton was relatively muted. Liberal Twitterites may have felt less comfortable supporting a Tory who'd attacked a Muslim woman. Well, now, what's that about? So this other guy can talk about blowing up an airport, but this guy talks about stoning somebody to death. That ain't cool, huh? But according to Evan Harris, who says that it's all pub chat, Compton's arrest is equally unfair. He said Compton's message, can someone please stone Yasmin Ali Baha Brown to death? I shan't tell Amnesty if you don't. Was obviously not a serious menace. I don't know how they find these things out. All right, we'll be back with our final segment here on the Phil Hendry Show. The TSA agent's campaign of getting punched, kicked, and headbutted. Plus, the Vatican charges or changes their tune on condom use. PhilHendryShow.com, our website. We'll be right back.
This is the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
TSA workers face a tough job, headbutted, punched, kicked, and shoved. This is what we call life imitates Phil. Last night we had on Art Griego, who said that, well, you know, the TSA workers have got no great shakes. You may not like being patted down, but they don't like patting you down. You know, people may not like being body scanned, but they don't like looking at you in those body scanners. So guess what? Today, the story from Tampa, Florida, they've been called molesters, they've been threatened with physical violence, they've been ordered not to touch, quote, my junk. One woman headbutted a TSA officer who was searching her laptop. Other screeners report being punched, kicked, and shoved during pat-downs. However, security officers performing increasingly invasive searches say they want Thanksgiving travelers to know they're doing their jobs and trying to save lives. Even though the agents face some considerable stress from passengers, they're determined to keep the traveling public safe, said Sari Koshetz, a TSA spokeswoman in Tampa. To be sure, most passengers are docile when going through an airport security checkpoint. But Ricky D. McCoy, who's the lead transportation officer and president of Local 777 Illinois and Wisconsin, which is a union for the TSA workers, said the atmosphere has changed in the last 2 weeks. Last week, for instance, McCoy explained the search to a passenger. The guy looked me straight in the face and said, "I don't know what I might do to you if you touch me." McCoy assured the man he would not be abused and then stared the man down and told him touching him would be the worst mistake he's ever made because authorities would be called. The search went smoothly. So these two guys, this guy had been threatened, and so he had to turn around and look him back in the face and say, you know, you put a hand on me, and guess what? You're going away, too. And this is insane. And I think that a lot of the freedom some people feel in threatening TSA workers and telling them don't touch me and telling them they're going to get their ass kicked and telling them all of these things, I have to be honest with you, has been promulgated by this medium I work in.
Oh, man, you gotta blame talk radio and all the stuff what's done.
I'm telling you, I've heard enough, and there are enough people to listen to talk radio. Let me put it to you this way, and I'd say it with all due respect. There are enough dummies that listen to talk radio that take their instruction from it, that when they hear their favorite host say, the sky is green today, pass it on, that's what they're going to do, that they'll go in and they will, get up in the kisser of somebody that's trying to do their job. Man, this is the law. You don't want to fly, don't fly. I don't know what to say. I mean, I wish that we would be more aggressive when it comes to looking at certain suspect types. I wish that that were the case, as opposed to being, oh, well, we've got to be egalitarian with this whole, now, so everybody's going to get searched, even though you know full damn well, if you're a cop, if your job has been to investigate these kinds of crimes, and your job has been to recognize possible suspects, possible perpetrators. This is your job. This is your career. This is your profession. But you're not allowed to do that because it's going to bum some people out. So instead, because it's going to bum people out and piss people off, that's exactly right. So instead, you have to deal with this eventuality, which is searching every mother's son going through the joint. And I can imagine it's frustrating. It's frustrating for the travelers and for the cops. I mean, I can't even, for any cop who has to actually, you know, go out and investigate these crimes or arrest these people. McCoy assured the man he would not be abused. But about 10 minutes later, the guy's wife came back and apologized for what he had said. Get that. The new pat-downs began about a month ago, and there was one assault on an officer early on. Since the story made headlines, McCoy said, there have been at least six incidents where officers were punched, pushed, or shoved after officers explained what would be happening. In one case, he said a passenger headbutted an officer as he looked at her laptop. He blamed TSA for the uproar, saying the agency didn't reach out to passengers enough. TSA's officers have received 8 to 12 hours of training on the pat-down procedures, Koshetz said. Training on the scanning machines is a three-day process that requires on-the-job training. She said the agents must pass their tests each year and requalify for their job. So despite the occasional outburst, many passengers are forgiving. So that's what I suspect.
I don't even think it's all that big of a deal. I think they make a big deal about three guys or something.
Yeah, but what about, I mean, how would you feel, man, if somebody's sticking his finger in your butt?
Nobody's sticking their finger. You know, what a weird thing to say, man. Have you heard of that happening?
I don't know.
Well, why don't you get some facts, dude? Get some facts as opposed to just going off, you know, all freaked out about what you think's going to happen. Despite the occasional outburst, many passengers are forgiving. I personally wouldn't want to be patted down, said 29-year-old Relena McLaughlin, an Army reservist from Orlando who had a layover Tuesday in Atlanta. But I think the security people are just doing their jobs. They have a service job, so they have to do what they're told to do. Valeria Lewis, a transportation security officer and president of AFGE Local 555, which covers Georgia, Tennessee, Alabama, and South Carolina, hasn't heard of officers encountering problems with passengers in her region. Most of the passengers are cooperative. The collective unease of many Americans over possible invasion of privacy, intimate touching, and so forth have led to a near instant backlash. Well, we'll see. We're going to take a break. I mean, we're going to take a 24-hour break is what we're taking.
Yeah.
Our show is produced by Jason Rantz, technical director Charles Wagon, and our associate producer Dan Northcraft. And don't forget our website, philhenryshow.com, live streaming video. Get a backstage pass. Listen to thousands of hours of you-know-what. Archive material from thousands and thousands of hours of show material. philhenryshow.com.
Phil Hendry.